Okay, good evening. It's Tuesday evening, January 1st. This is Rabbi Feldman's cheer. Tonight's cheer is sponsored by Aviva and David Horowitz to commemorate the yahrzeit of David's father, Raphael ben Yechiel David Halevi.
Good evening. We've been talking for a number of weeks with a slight detour for Hanukkah, but going back some weeks before Hanukkah, we were talking about general themes of chesed. I talked about the Ben Adam L'Chaver realm in general, then Chesed more specifically, and then some of the examples within Chesed of the specific modules which the Rambam seems to imply are actually rabbinically created, the idea that we have these individual categories. We spoke about, for example, Bikur Cholim, Hachnas Osorchim, Nichum Avelim, and the like. And we're up to a topic which was really a Vayechi topic. It got a little bit pushed off, but it's a topic we're all familiar with from the very opening psukim of that parsha, where we're told about a chesed emes, that Yaakov asked of his son Yosef that he should do for him this true chesed, whatever that means, and the very well-known comment of Rashi that the chesed that you do for the dead is considered to be a chesed emes or a chesed emes, that somebody who can't pay you back, you can't say, well, this is simply a social contract, I'll do this for you, you'll do it for me, you'll owe me later, since that's not possibly a part of the equation. So therefore, this chesed has a more pristine nature to it, and therefore, that's the title that it's given. So let's talk a little bit tonight about that category, which is really a package of obligations. Rabbeinu B'chaya writes in his commentary to Parshas Chayisara, which is also a prominent theme, the burial of Sarah and the Hesped that's mentioned over there for her as well. So there is a Rabbeinu B'chaya writes, it's all one continuous package of Chesed, the Kvura, the Levaya, the Hesped, all of that, everything that goes along with that, this is all one continuous Chesed. And the truth is Kvura, taken as a mitzvah, is an interesting kind of mitzvah because in its own sense, it's an independent mitzvah, which is not simply done as a kindness to the mace. It's something that has to be done whether he likes it or not. It's not optional. This is why in Jewish tradition why we're so opposed to cremation, because kvura is an obligation. It's the din. It's a separate pasuk in the Torah. And yet, at the same time, the act of kvura itself is also subsumed within the category of chesed. So it's both an independent mitzvah. There aren't many things that are in this category which both it's an independent mitzvah and it's a mitzvah that by its very nature requires other people to get involved. And some of them, of course, in fact, say that that's what it means when it says chesed emes. That every other chesed, you know, we think we're helping the person, but who knows, maybe the person is just humoring us, maybe he doesn't really need the food, doesn't really need to be hosted, doesn't really want to be visited when he's sick, but whatever, he's letting us look like it's a chesed, so we can do what we have to do. But here, there's no ifs about it. It's clear that this person needs to be taken care of in this way. There's no variables. There's nothing to question about it. And so in that sense also, it's a pure chesed, maybe, than all the other chasadim, and all the other chasadim that we have. So first of all, when we talk about chesed, so when we talk about funerals, the word we use in Hebrew for funeral is levaya. And levaya literally means escorting. And escorting is certainly the first and foremost the component that we hear about when we talk about this obligation. And we find that in the context of escorting the mace, so the Mishnah tells us that this obligation is something that is docha even Talmud Torah. So this is actually grouped together with Hachnasas Kala, which is a whole separate story in of itself, but a lot of the sources talk about them both together, including the Mishnah. Now for the purpose of, and again we find Levaya there also, for accompanying a bride to her chuppah and accompanying the mace to his final resting place. In both these cases, so we're told that Talmud Torah is pushed away, so to speak, for these obligations. And in a parallel sense, we're also told that not only people in the Beis Medrash, you know, sometimes they say that it's always easiest to volunteer for something, ain't ben choron el misha osik b'torah, the guy in the Beis Medrash is the first person who can come because he's free, so to speak. But that's not really what the Mishnah normally means. But people who are working, they're the ones who are really committed. So here you find both. You find that the Mevatel Talmud Torah, and you find Mevatel Melacha also, that the people in the city, when there's a funeral going on, are supposed to be Mevatel from their work. They're supposed to stop work, and they're all supposed to go to the funeral. So in these cases, it's a little complex, because, again, source-wise, it seems that both of these groups of people, the people learning and the people working, are obligated, wherever there's a funeral in town, the whole town has to shut down, the Beis Medrash and the workplaces, and everybody has to go and participate in the funeral. So when it comes to the point of Talmud Torah, so some of the commentaries ask, well, that's not so surprising, because as we discussed a little bit in the past few weeks, so Talmud Torah in general, the rule is that Talmud Torah does not exempt you from other mitzvahs. That if there's another mitzvah that presents itself, and you're involved in learning, so you're supposed to stop learning to do the mitzvah. And the Gemara says in Moed Karton, it really depends on what kind of mitzvah it is, that if it's a mitzvah that somebody else can do, so then fine, you should continue learning and let the other people do it. But if it's a mitzvah that's not going to get done by anybody else, or it can't be done by anybody else, so then you're supposed to stop learning in order to do it. And here, it's pretty much by definition the case that it can't be done by anybody else, because when we see both in the context of the bride and the context of the funeral, strange talking about the two such opposite extremes in the same sentence, but a lot of the literature they're grouped together for this purpose, in both cases, it's not clear when you have enough people. It's very possible that the measurement, the shear for how many people you need to have, is extraordinarily high. So, if you're not there, it's not that it'll be done by somebody else, because having fewer people there takes away from the honor to both of these ceremonies. So it's very hard to have a scenario, really, where this mitzvah is really taken care of. For the most part, it's not taken care of, and anybody who's going to come is going to be adding to the mitzvah. So just plugging in the normal rules of Talmud Torah not exempting you from other mitzvahs, you wouldn't need to be told that this is true in this case. That should, simply speaking, be the rule. So some want to suggest that actually here, this is important to focus on when we talk about what the mitzvah is in general. So you could think, so what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is kavura. So the actual mitzvah of kavura, that could be taken care of with fewer people. And the fact that you need people accompanying and people doing all the other things, that doesn't sound like it's part of the mitzvah. It sounds like it's a hechsher mitzvah, or it's, you know, kind of a accompaniment to the mitzvah. It doesn't sound like it's the mitzvah itself. So some want to suggest that maybe that's why we have to be told this, that this is also part of the whole chesed that's taking place, and therefore it has its own requirements, and therefore even if the kavura is going to get done 100% without you, still there's an obligation for you to stop learning and to stop working and to join the funeral. Now there happens to be a machlokas rishonim, is this something that's obligatory or is this an option that we say that you have the option of stopping learning in order to do this? But it seems like the majority of Svar and Paskin is an obligation. So the question is, so what's going on? So we don't find that this is what happens. We don't find that all the yeshivas shut down, and the whole town shuts down, all the workplaces, all the factories, all the offices, they all shut down every time there's a funeral. So it's a hard question, and there are a lot of suggestions, and there isn't one simple answer. It's actually quoted in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein, in the Sefer Halicha Shlomo. This is the beautiful svarim that they have of the Pesachim of Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach. Very nicely laid out, very nicely footnoted. And totally random subjects you find in a totally random place. And so in the volume on Tzila, it has a footnote about this, that someone asked Rav Shlomo Zalman about this, and Rav Shlomo Zalman said, you're about to go to America, why don't you ask Rav Moshe Feinstein about it? And so somebody came to Rav Moshe with two questions, a very, very serious question, and this question as well. And when they found Rav Moshe, he was reclining, and they asked him this very serious question, and he answered. And then we asked him this other question, so why is it that we don't follow the din in the Shulchan Aruch as far as the funerals? So that he got up, we couldn't think about it reclining, it was too vexing a question. And he said, there isn't really a good answer. We don't really know why it is. And you find various suggestions that are mentioned in Sfarim. Some suggest that the chiyuv is only when you know the exact moment of movement. To accompany when the body is moving, when the bride is moving. So you usually don't know the exact time. And so therefore there isn't a technical obligation. And Shlomo Zalman was into this story as well. You know, that's why we're lucky that wedding invitations are usually not accurate. They tell you roughly what time the chuppah is, roughly what time the kabbalah's panim is. It's usually not right. So if we were right, we'd be in trouble. If we knew exactly what it was, we'd all have to go. And if we knew exactly when the body was moving, we would all have to go. So that's one suggestion for him. Of course, it's a very technical approach, and you just have to be fortunate enough to not know in order to not have the obligation. Others suggest that this whole reference to talking about the whole town, that's when the whole town formed one community, so everybody was integrated in that way, so then they all had to stop. And nowadays, you know, we're into smaller shul groups, but if you follow that story, so it would still suggest that at least the shuls would have to, everybody in the shuls would have to stop what they're doing, and that's still you don't find. Others suggest various other approaches the Chevra Kadisha is able to stand in for the city. There are other approaches that are found, and again, none of them are totally satisfactory. Rabbi Yashiv and his Haris and Shachas Ksubis writes that really no one answered by itself really seems to do it, and it must be that all the different stories that are suggested together is a limud chas on the community as a whole. And others point out, we just have to admit that we're not on the level to be able to properly adhere to the requirements of this mitzvah. We do the best we can. We do the best we can as far as fulfilling. So when we talk about Levaya, Levaya literally means to accompany on the way. So what's the shir? How much do you have to accompany? So on the one hand, you find a shir of Daladamas. So you should walk with them for Daladamas is somewhere between 6 and 8 feet. So we say Amas is between 1.5 to 2 feet. So on the one hand, you find that reference. Others point out that the obligation really should be up until the Beis HaKvaros, up until the cemetery itself. So some say, well, it's a minimum of Dalet Amos, and ideally it's the Beis HaKvaros. Chafetz Chaim writes in his Avos Chesed that if we can't make it to the Beis HaKvaros, so at least as a community, we're obligated to try to make sure there's going to be a minyan at the Beis HaKvaros. We always consider that to be the minimum to be able to be reciting Kaddish and the like. So certainly that's a communal obligation to make sure that there's a minyan there. But as far as your personal obligation, so there is some tension here among the sources. Is it Dalet Amos or is it all the way? So the Minchas Abadu suggests as follows. Munkat Rebbe in his Shuvas, he suggests that the resolution is that the way it's phrased in Shulchan Aruch is that whoever doesn't accompany the Mesh is in the category of Loeg LaRash. It's a familiar phrase, the Pasuk in Sefer Mishlei, which the Gemara in the third parak of Brachos quotes. Literally the Pasuk means Loeg LaRash is somebody who makes fun of a Rash. A Rash is a poor person, Reish Shin. Someone who makes fun of a poor person, Cherif Hoseyu, is mocking his creator. So it's an insult to God. So a person doesn't have anything else and you make fun of him, so that's considered to be an insult to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he's the one who made him and that's the way he is. And the Gemara applies that in the category of somebody who's no longer alive in a couple of different contexts. The Gemara says if you're going to do mitzvos in the front of somebody who's not living, so in a sense it's mocking him because people who are deceased can't fulfill mitzvos anymore and living people can, so it's kind of like making fun of them that you can do what they can't. That's why we don't wear tzitzis out in the cemetery or things like that. Various overt mitzvos are not supposed to be performed in front of the mace, including Talmud Torah and the like. So all of that is subsumed under this heading of Loeg LaRash Cherif Hoseyu. So it says in Shulchan Aruch also that one who doesn't accompany the mace, one who's not in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Levaya, is also in violation of Loeg LaRash Cherif Hoseyu. And the way some understand it is like this is the parallel to Chesed Shel Emes. That in a sense you're saying that just like it's called a Chesed Shel Emes because you can't get paid back, So too, to not engage in it is like saying, ha, you can't do anything to me anyway, so I'm not going to help you because I can't get anything out of you. So it's as if you're mocking the mace by saying, I don't have to help you because there's nothing you can do to me, nothing you can do for me. So Shulchan Aruch has this faith that whoever doesn't accompany the mace is a violation of Loeg LaRash Cherif Hoseyu. So it probably means that you have to do a token accompaniment. That means Dalet Amos. If you want to not be in violation of Loeg LaRash Cherif Hoseyu, so you should accompany him Dalet Amos. But really, the chesed that's required, if you can, is to go all the way to the Beis HaKvaros. That's really what we're talking about. That's really what's going on. So that's the discussion as to how much is the yeshir of accompaniment. There's also a discussion about the nature of the levaya, that the levaya should be done in a respectful way. People should be walking slowly. They shouldn't be rushing. They shouldn't push each other. If they push each other, so that's a violation both of Kavod HaChayim and Kavod HaMeis. At the same time, you're not only not properly respecting the mace, you're also not respecting the chayim, and that itself is a problem. The whole discussion about the separating, and the Gemara has an expression in the Sakhal schooling that even in the context of mitzvos, when you have a limited quantity and people are pushing to get at it, so the Gemara has a statement that people who are unrefined are the ones who are pushing. The hatznu in moshchem et yadayim, and people who are modest, they pull back their hands. They don't push to get in front. Hi. There are differences between Talmidei Chacham and Menhag as far as the standards that are required and as far as the Bittul Torah point. There are some nuances, but I'm broadly talking about every mace. If we get into some details, there are nuances that... Right, so that's part of the question as to how do we reconcile some of these requirements. This is why we're throwing our hands up. that maybe this refers to, this is kind of a throwback to a culture where there wasn't an eighth every day, where towns were smaller and where this was conceivable. Nowadays, in a city context, it for sure seems to be impossible, and this is part of what the Mefarshim are struggling with. What the Poskim are struggling with, how is it that we reconcile that? So in any case, just to go back to this point, so the Sfarim point out that you have to be careful not to push other people. That's the idea that we have Tznu Moshchem Es Yadayim. Bavad Yosef has a tshuva, which also comes up in the context of, for example, we know this considered to be a kavod amaz to daven for yomim. But sometimes you have a situation where people will punch each other out, trying to be the one who gets to daven for yomim. Each one has a mace for trying to honor. So as Bavad Yosef points out in the tshuva, and we don't even point it out, it's quite self-evident that there's no greater disrespect the nation is going to get than that. That's certainly not something that's going to bring nachas ruach. Treating people b'shalom and b'derech eretz is, of course, a much greater covet to the living and to the deceased. So certainly to be walking in a way that's pushing other people out of the way so you can get to the fun, so that's certainly not in keeping with any of the values that we have. And even if you're not pushing other people, but to rush to get through it, so that's also not really respectful to the nation either. And as we'll see here, we have a little bit of a delicate balance, because on the one hand, we want to get to the burial as quick as possible, because there is a principle of Havanas HaNeish, that we're not supposed to delay the actual burial. But on the other hand, we do allow the process to take as long as it needs to in order to be properly respectful to the Neish. And Yerushalayim, the standards are a little bit different, and it's because of some of the severity associated with Yerushalayim. But when it comes to outside Yerushalayim, we're more open to balancing Kavod HaNeish with not delaying the burial. But it becomes a tricky thing. So on the one hand, we do want to make it happen as early as possible, but at the same time, we want that it should be done in the B'chavadik way, so you're not rushing when procession is going on. And as we alluded to a few minutes ago, there also shouldn't be any extraneous conversation in this context. We shouldn't be talking about anything else. And even Divrei Torah, even if people want to talk and run along the way, so that's a problem of Loig Barash Chayef HaSeyu, that's to be talking about mitzvahs, to be doing mitzvahs, talking about Torah in the presence of the mace is offensive to the mace. So the Gemara actually has two comments. There's that Gemara at the beginning of the third parak of Brachos, and then there's a Gemara at the beginning of the first parak, and Afkem Olig Beis, where the Gemara says, Ein Omrim B'Fnei HaMeish Elo Dvar of Shomeish, but you shouldn't talk in front of that body anything other than the things pertaining to that particular individual. So it's really two separate Yisurim that kind of overlap. On the one hand, talking about anything else is really inappropriate, and talking about Torah is a problem of Loi Garash. And so talking about Torah could in theory be both. If it's, you want to talk about the Sugya and Bava Kama you're learning that morning, so it could be both Loi Garash and, in a sense, disrespectful to the Neish. And of course, this is something that's mitigated during the Hespedim. We'll talk about with Hespedim, we talk about things that are recovered in Eish, so that we don't find a limitation on not quoting Torah sources, because that itself is part of the covered in Eish, and we don't find that to be a problem of either one of these prohibitions. Again, it takes a little bit of Chachma to balance the song, which is a little bit tricky. No, well, the conversation along the way really shouldn't be an extraneous conversation at all, but even Torah conversation is really not appropriate at that point either. So during the Hespit, you may have need to refer to, right, to the Torah L'Chavon HaMeish, so that becomes Mutter, but it's usually hard to imagine that being relevant along the way. It's a little bit of a different kind of thing. There is also an obligation if one sees a procession pass, so ideally they should be joining, but if they're not going to join either way, they should be standing. They should stand up when the mace passes by. And there's a little bit of a machlokus in the poskim why that is. The Taz writes that it's actually nothing to do with the mace. It has to do with the people accompanying the mace. That we have a principle in general that we stand for people who are doing a mitzvah. It's based on the Mishnah and Bikurim. And it may actually be, this is part of a whole discussion, may actually be why we stand up for a chassan as he walks down to the chuppah. That, many people assume that that's based on the idea of chasim dom v'lamelech, so he stands up for a king because he's royalty that day. And it's actually not 100% possible that's the reason. It's very possible that he's going to fulfill the mitzvah of kedushin, so he stands up for that reason. There's actually a little bit of a discussion whether you stand up for the kavod or the practices to stand up for both of them. There's a little bit of a discussion in the sources based on the question of why is it that we're standing up. So in any event, that's what the Taz writes, that when the funeral procession goes by, we stand up because of the people, because of the living people who are involved in this mitzvah of chesed. And in the Pesachei Tshuva, of course, in the Yad Eliyahu, that it's, no, it's more what you think. It's Kavanah Meis. You stand up for the Kavanah Meis as he passes by. So many contemporary posts can write that this would apply even if, let's say, you're inside your house. Let's say you're inside your house and a funeral procession passes by. You should stand up then. And some posts can write even if you're on a bus. And Rabbi Shlomo Zalman went as far as to say that if you're on a bus and the bus stops or the bus turns a different direction, you have to get off and accompany the procession that way. Shammai Kehaz Gross, the Belz Adayin in Eretz Yisrael, his truth was he wasn't so sure about either of those cases. He wasn't so sure about somebody inside a house or somebody inside a bus. He said halachically the house and the bus constitute other issues. If it's another issue, you're not technically in the same place as Mesh. So he thought there was at least a technical exemption for those people. He also brings in another tshuva, something which he thought was for sure, if I remember, but he recorded as a practice that was brought down. There was a certain elderly Tamil Chacham who was in his house and he wasn't able to leave his house. But when he heard a funeral procession come by, even if he couldn't see it, but he knew what was going on, he would stand up and he would walk Daladamas in his house. He kind of would make a little procession in his house, and he would feel that way. He is Mekayim Halva is amazing. And Sheikh Zakahashi writes that he thinks that's a Chomer, and that's what makes it. That was the practice that at least this one Talmud Chacham had, even from within his house. It sounds like, according to this, you stop in your car. It's a question how far you go with that, and if you see the funeral processions in the cars. And I think it's usually very difficult to change course, at least to have the Sheva Dakahashi to rely on. And I think the car constitutes a separate process. It seems like there is less talk about this. This is an area which we see case and case again. It's very challenging as far as our practice, as far as what it is that we're able to do. Now, in addition, even though we talk about Levaya as being the central theme, that's the word we use, the physical accompaniment, but it's clear that listening to the Hespedim and listening to the eulogies is also a part of the obligation. And that theoretically also could raise the question of whether one is even permitted to leave then. If one is in the middle of listening to the Hespedim, maybe one should have an obligation to stay throughout all of that, which could also be very difficult. Harshness wrote a lot of fascinating story among the Pilgrim on Shabbos, and he has a book of Tshuvas called Vayivarech David. So if Harfinus writes in his Tshuvas that there was a practice he was familiar with in the Sabna Rebbe, he's a Sabna Chassid of Harfinus, and the Sabna Rebbe had a practice that if he was asked to speak at a Levaya, he would request to be the last speaker, and that way he would speak, and then after speaking he would be able to participate in the procession, because he was there for that. But if he was an earlier speaker, if he didn't get his request, he wouldn't necessarily stay for everything. He would maybe sometimes speak and leave, and he wouldn't be there during the actual physical movement. So Parfenis wanted to suggest, based on that Maaser Rav, that perhaps there really is a need to stay for the Hespedim. That's a show of kavod. But if a person is giving a Hesped, so that itself is a much more recognizable, overt act of kavod, so one could suggest that one who's actually speaking might be able to, in a sense, get off more easily as far as not having to necessarily be there for all the Hespedim. But even if you're not speaking, it's still not necessarily possible for everyone to be there for the whole time. So one contemporary sefer, the Beis Moed, suggests that this was parallel probably to what we saw before about Dalet Amos from the Beis HaKvaris, that there's a kind of a minimum and an ideal. So to here. So ideally you'll be there for the whole proceeding. If not, to be there for some portion is also a fulfillment. It's also a fulfillment on some level. And of course, the whole idea of Hesped itself is a concept which goes back to the Gemara and has its own independent chesed. Goes back to the Torah, goes back to the told Avram and Sarah and the like. And this machlokus in the Gemara, what is the purpose of Hesped? And as we'll see, there are a lot of sub-purposes of Hesped. This machlokus in the Gemara, what is the overall theme of the Hesped? Is it something that we call Yikara Dechaye? I'll start the other way around. Is it Yikara Dechachvi? Is it something that we do for the honor of the deceased? Which is what it sounds like. We do it as a reaction to the deceased's needs, part of the whole chesed to Mr. Rubert. Or is it really for the survivors? Is it what's called Yikara Dechaye? For the honor of those who are living. And the Gemara actually paskins that it's Yikara Dechachvi, that it's for the deceased. And the ramifications of that being that if somebody insists that he should not be eulogized, he has the right to do that. has a right to demand that he's not going to be eulogized. And there is some discussion whether or not this applies to Gadol HaDor. If a person who is a prominent rabbinic leader says that he doesn't want to be eulogized, and the community is going to lose out on that whole inspiration, so then it's a little bit of a discussion. They say that no did Yehuda eulogize the Tnei Yeshua against his wishes, because that's what he felt Klal Yisrael needed. So there's some discussion about that, but strictly speaking, emergency in the Gemara, that a person has the right to insist on not having any eulogies. And if he does have eulogies, and if they have to be paid for, if that's the case, so then the money is supposed to come from his assets, because again, it's something for him rather than from their relatives. As Rabbi Michal Kaczynski points out in the Gesher Achaim, that doesn't mean that we pick one over the other. It doesn't mean that it's Yichara Dishachri and not Yichara Dishai. It's clearly both. It's just that this is the edge. So therefore, Lachon Laisha, for example, if a person doesn't care whether he gets a hesped or not, he still has faith, he doesn't make a difference in one way or another, so then we are masped him because there is a value to the survivors, and therefore if he doesn't have a preference, then the hesped is provided for them.
Or if it's a day where you're not supposed to do this
faith. Right, so then that becomes a complicated question. If a day you're not supposed to do this faith, so then you don't, and there's a question as to how far you can go with it, and that becomes a little bit of a tricky area also, with a little bit of a blurry line, which practically speaking tends to get blurry. But strictly speaking, this is talking about a day when you do have hesbedim. So if you do have hesbedim, so then if a person doesn't say one way or another, so as Kaczynski points out, so then because of the needs of the survivors, so then there should be a hesped. And it benefits them in a number of ways. It benefits them in it's a type of nichum, that they're comforted a little bit by hearing these things, and that it helps them to appreciate what they lost, and that it inspires them. And inspires them is also a key element. Yonos Neipritz has a number of drushes about this in his Yaris Drash, that the idea of evoking tshuva, of getting the listeners to pay attention and to realize what it means to be a good person, and what it means to be the loss to the world, all of that is important in the process, and therefore that's what's described as part of the goals of the hesped. And therefore it's written that the speaker should be able to evoke tears from the listeners, that he should speak in an emotional way that's going to evoke a response where people are going to react and they're going to have this inspiration towards tshuva and this recognition of what they're missing. And that's all a key part of the hesped. Now, in general, when it comes to hesped, so we're still required to be honest. We're still supposed to say the truth. But you do find that the Bach and others state that you can go a little bit more than the truth was. You're allowed to exaggerate a little bit. So it's a question whether you can exaggerate as far as qualities you didn't have at all, or things that didn't happen at all, or just take the existing qualities and the existing accomplishments and step them up one notch, so not 10 notches, but one notch. And why is that? So there's a little different interpretations as to why this is. One interpretation is that the assumption is that we don't really know exactly what the person's life is like. We only know what we saw, and who knows what we didn't see. And we're worried that as much as we're worried about saying something false, we're more worried that there is a very severe condemnation in the Gemara of somebody who's not maspid somebody karoi. That if a person doesn't get the proper treatment, eulogy, if a person is shortchanged, so that's both a tremendous offense to the person, and it also reflects, also something that reflects very badly on the survivors. The whole idea of it being a kara d'shachri is the idea that we're kind of judged on the reaction that we have, and that to not properly mourn a decent person as a gemara says in Adam Kasher is considered to be a tremendous condemnation on the people who are surviving. And therefore, we're more worried about that. We're more worried about making a mistake that's going to shortchange the mace. So therefore, we err on the side of caution. So say a little more than you know to be true rather than a little bit less, and that's considered to be the safer route.
Is humor appropriate?
Humor in general is, strictly speaking, not appropriate. And sometimes it's a very effective way of getting a point across, and sometimes one can make the judgment that the survivors needed a little bit in order to be able to hear what you're saying. If they're too grief-stricken and they can't even hear your words, then it's a way of getting a fact across. To break the atmosphere is really not appropriate. But sometimes to make your words a little more palatable, if somebody can make the judgment that it's fitting sometimes. So we discussed a similar concept when we talked about Nichum Aveilim. So when it comes to Nichum Aveilim, there's a slight difference you find in some of the later Achronim, that for the most part, most of the contemporary Sfarim point out at great length that it's really not right that a Beis Avos should be talking about anything else other than the direct issue at hand. And then you find some Sfarim say that a little bit is right in order to kind of distract them a little bit. So the first group will say, you're not supposed to distract them, that's the whole point. You're not supposed to be distracted from the grief. That's what the Nichum Aveilim is about, that's what Aveilus is about. And others say, right, so to really distract them, it's not right, but to make their process a little bit more bearable while you're doing it has a level of appropriateness with a little bit of judgment that's called for, and that's somewhat subject to judgment. For the most part, there's certainly a serious time where you find that evoking tears is really a little bit what we're going for. And if you have to exaggerate a little bit, so then that's appropriate in the idea that you're erring on the side of caution, that you're not shortchanging the person. And also, as some of the unfortunate explain, that when you see a person already has a tendency to act, let's say, generously, or to act kindly, to do something positive, so then you could assume that he only did it to this degree because he was only called upon to this degree. But if he was called upon more, he probably would have provided even more. He's already shown that he was going in that direction anyway. So therefore, it's not false to say, to move things up a notch and say that if he had more opportunities, he would have risen to that occasion also. And therefore, some degree of going up a notch is considered to be true from that perspective as well. But to say something that's really completely false, that's considered inappropriate, and as a Sfarim point out, it's not a benefit to the deceased, not a benefit to the living. It's supposed to be things that are generally true, and it could be a little bit more than you knew firsthand. There is also, this is a part of where you see this tricky balance. So the Taz writes that the Maspidim have to be careful that this is not a time to show off their speaking ability, to show off the great drasha that they have, or the great Tvar Torah that they have. And here Moshe Sternberg points out in his Shuvas, which is similar to the point we were saying before, that if a person speaks too long, so if he already loses track of the Kavanah Mesh in his speech, so that's already not helping the Mesh, it's not helping the audience, and then you're again bordering on Halanas HaMesh, then you're delaying the funeral for no reason, and that's not considered appropriate either. So again, a tricky balance, knowing exactly how to measure your words, so you're saying things that are appropriately Kavanah HaMesh, and at the same time, you're not allowing any other motivations to creep in, which is going to take away from all of that. And just maybe one final point on that area. So not everybody is necessarily so fortunate to be called upon to speak and to say what they know. So Rav Harfenis writes in his Shuvas that the way he understands it, that the obligation of Hesped doesn't only mean to people who get up and speak in public at the Levayim, but people who know things that they can contribute to the way people are going to remember him and to the experience that people are going to be having, and they can say it on a one-on-one basis. So that's also part of the Din of Hesped. So the same way a person who's speaking in front of the whole assembly is going to evoke tears and is going to evoke a greater appreciation of who this person was and of what his loss means to the community. So too, people who are walking in, and one person can say to the next person, you know, he was such and such, you know, such and such. That's also a part of Hesped, even if it's not a public delivery, and that's the appropriate kind of speech that could happen along with, you know, procession and there. So all of that, again, as we said, this is really all one package. This is all one part of the group Chesed, or Chesed Shalemesh, that applies to the deceased. And the Medrash actually tells us that when Avram Avinu buried Sarah, the Medrash says now he really earned the title of being like Hashem, really following God's ways. So it's a funny thing to say, because here Avram spent his whole life doing chesed for the whole world, and here when he buried his wife, that's something anybody would have done. And it's not something that you have to be a special king of chesed to do. So as Rashi of Kambi Avna explained in his Sefer, that it's really this point, that everything else he did in his life, interacting with living people, so that could be utilitarian, that could be a part of a social contract that people should be hoping to pay him back. But here, even though it was kind of an obvious thing to do, it was his lifelong mate, But since he's clearly not expecting any kind of payback at this point, so it's only chesed, not chesed. So that's really the chesed of halachta b'drachah. That's really the chesed of being like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the Medrash is saying here, now he's really reached that tachlis of really imitating a Kodesh Baruch Hu's way. So just to quickly echazu what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that we find that this chesed shlamis title is given to this whole heading of mitzvos, and that kfura is a little bit perhaps unique in this way because it's an independent mitzvah which is regardless of the person's wishes, and yet at the same time it's also a chesed because it's a mitzvah the person cannot fulfill himself and it requires other people to do it for him, and therefore it's a unique combination of a straight yoredeya kind of mitzvah and a chesed at the same time. And we talked a little bit about the fact that we find there's a requirement to be mevatel both Torah and work for a funeral. It's possible that's optional, but we seem to pass it as obligatory. So the question is, why do we not find people doing this? And this is a question that great poskim, such as Moshe Feinstein, as well as Amon Arbach, and Rabbi Yashiv, all felt was really not adequately answered. And we have to use the combination of different scars that we find, whether it's that the Chaver Kadisha is really representing all of us, whether it's never meant to refer to a modern-day type of city context, whether it's that it only applies if you know the exact moment that things are happening. Whatever it is, it's a need to try to find enough limud chos why we haven't really fully lived up to the standard that we find in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch in reference to this obligation. And this obligation is generally phrased as levaya, which would mean physically to accompany. Question whether that means dalet amos, whether it means the beis hakvaris, whether one's the ideal version or one's the minimum. The Rav Stein pointing out that at least you have to make sure that the beis hakvaris is going to be a minion. And we mentioned in Menchas Olazos the distinction that in order to avoid the prohibition of making fun of the mace, so to speak, so you have to at least go Dalet Amos, but the Chesed really goes all the way to the Beis HaKvaros. We talked a little bit about the behavior during the Levaya, that people should walk a respectful way, not too fast, not pushing anybody else for sure. We talked a little bit about the emotional Mesidayim and about how that undermines everything. And they shouldn't be talking about anything else, not even the Divrei Torah. We talked about the two phrases in the Gemara. On the one hand, Ein Omruf Nehmeis El Dvarash Hameis, and also the separate prohibition of doing mitzvahs, including Torah study in front of the Meis, and how that overlaps. And then we talked about also the mitzvah of listening to the Hespedim, and the question of how much of the Hespedim you have to stay for. A possible parallel that ideally would be there for all of them, but even a little bit, just like the Dalet Amos. And we mentioned the Satmar Rebbe's practice of asking that he should speak last, so that he could both speak and then be part of the Levaya. But if he spoke earlier, he would not always necessarily stay. And we mentioned of Harfness's suggestion that maybe if you're giving a Hesped, that's a more overt, recognizable act of covenant that can allow for less of the physical presence the rest of the time. And then we talked a little bit about the obligation of Hesped, whether it's Yipara Dechaye or Yipara Deshachli, the Psak and the Gemara that is for the deceased, and therefore they could decide to dispense with it if they want to, and they also have to pay for it if it has to be paid for. And then we talked about the Gesher Achayim's point that really it's both, so therefore if you all think equal, you will have a Hesped, and the question of what the Hesped is supposed to evoke, how it's supposed to increase the sense of loss, how it's supposed to be an honor to the mace, and how it's also supposed to be a comfort a little bit, and how it's also supposed to evoke tshuva, supposed to evoke tears in order to get to all of that. And then we talked also a little bit about this idea of exaggerating a little bit, that well, we're not supposed to say something that's false, you say something that's not true, it's not a cover to anybody, but to exaggerate a little bit is allowed or recommended, and we'll discuss why that is. Either it's because it's erring on the side of caution, because chances are there are good things that we don't know about, or also it's in a sense true, because the assumption of the person has already shown certain good tendencies, so chances are if they were called on to do more, they would have done more also, and therefore they deserve credit for that as well. And then we talked a little bit about this idea of not going too long, and how that's not going to be a cover for anybody if the speaker is just showing off his oratory rather than being covered on mace. And there's some of those points about how then you start bordering on halamas and mace as well, and that's something to take into consideration also. And we mentioned that Harfenis is the point that the Hesped is not only a reference to the public speaking in front of everybody, but also individuals who are not called upon to speak to the crowd, but who can contribute to the experience, should share it with other people who are there, and that's also a part of this obligation of Hesped, and that all of this, the Hesped and the Levi and the Kvura, all become a part of this heading of Chesed Shalemesh, which is represented by represented by Yaakov and Yosef. It goes back throughout the Torah, and that's Medrash that Avram was considered to be really lucky for his Baruch when he buried his wife, something anybody would have done, but the fact that it was something pure, not subject to any repayment, that makes the chesed really in the sense of a last of the Drachma, and that's what's represented by that. Okay, Shikara, have a wonderful week.